we were always working on a CPM, a CPM negotiation, and getting banners and more banners created and loaded. It was an incredibly, incredibly manual process.
Early to bed, early to rise, eat right and advertise. Early to bed, early to rise. One more thing, get your name out there.
Hello and welcome to Paleo Ad Tech. I'm Marty Kine.
And I'm Jill Royce. And we are the hosts of this podcast that looks at the first two decades of advertising and marketing technology.
From double click to double verify and everything in between.
Get your name out there.
So this week we are delighted to welcome Blagica Botiliero to the program. She is the director of affiliate marketing at JB Commerce. Blagica joined the Giant Step agency in the late 90s. Giant Step was co-founded by the legendary Risha Dabakwala and Adam Hannigan. Then Blagica joined Orbitz in 2001 as a media planner and was later VP of strategy at Edelman Digital in Chicago, where she may or may not have had the distinct pleasure of working with my co-host, Jill Royce. After Edelman, Blagica had various senior strategic roles in social media and marketing for Motorola Mobility, Google, and Target. Yay. So we like to start with a random personal question that it actually isn't that personal. But so when you were a little girl in Michigan, did you have any career goals for yourself?
Yes, I wanted to be Angela Bauer from Who's the Boss? Because I remember she was an advertising executive. I think she had her own advertising firm. And I loved the show. And Alyssa Milano is a little old, just I think maybe 2 years older than me. So I loved Alyssa Milano. I loved her hair. I loved the way she dressed on the show. And then here's Angela Bauer, who has this powerhouse job. And she always, the shoulder pads. And so I was an advertising major at Western. And part of it is because of Angela Bauer, Judith Light. Thank you, Judith.
There's a path you take and a path not taken.
How did you end up at Giant Step and what was Giant Step?
Yeah, so there was a competitive job with Ogilvy & Mather in New York that the Direct Marketing Association ran. And it was a competitive job where you went through a year at the agency in New York. And I got the job and I accepted it. And I was supposed to move to Queens. And then a girlfriend of mine who was a year ahead of me at Western, Holly, she was working for this company called Giant Step, and it was, you know, working with this thing called the internet. Giant Step was a digital web agency in Chicago, and they were looking for a production coordinator. So I thought, you know, why not interview and give it a go? And I got the job, and I had to decide, do I move to New York? Do I go to Chicago? And I ended up going to Chicago to try out this internet thing to be closer to my family here in the Detroit area. And so that's what happened. I took the job and straight out of school, I moved to Chicago and then I was working for Giant Step. And that was led by Adam and Eric Hannigan. You mentioned Rashad as well. And at the time it was the digital arm of brands like, I worked on Maytag. I was an appliance queen for 2 years. Oldsmobile, remember Oldsmobile? The brand or GM, that was a client, as was United Airlines. It was a really interesting time with .com in Chicago. This is circa 1998 to about 2001.
What were brands doing with the internet in those days? Was it about standing up websites for them?
Yes. So twice a month, I drove myself to Newton, Iowa, and I received approval to buy books on tape to keep me company. And I was the internet steward for Maytag. I was essentially the project coordinator between the guys and gals back at Giant Step building the website. So back then, it literally was about things from a catalog and digitizing it to the web.
I have to ask you about Rashad. He's so famous now. What was he like then? What was he interested in? Was he thinking big thoughts? And
he was always quiet. And at the time, I was at Giant Step before it was formally purchased. It was an arm of Leo Burnett. Giant Step was an arm of Leo Burnett, and then it kind of folded into it. And there was some ownership changes at the time. But he was always quiet. He was always a deep thinker. And I was starting out my career from school, so I knew who he was, and always knew when I had a question or we had a challenge, he would pause, and then something really smart would come out.
So you were there, obviously, for the .com boom, right? So
when you think about that, you know, and you put yourself back in that setting, did you think the world was changing forever, or did you really like not, you know, think about the magnitude of what you were working on, what was happening?
We knew we were doing something that was different and new, but we didn't have a playbook. So we just had to go with it and figure it out. We knew the world was changing and we knew we were part of it. It wasn't a wild time, but back then there were so many agencies. All these brands were trying to get online. There was beer in the fridge. I went to two of the infamous Leo Burnett, the Burnett breakfasts, for example. I remember one of the parties was at Dennis Rodman's club. I was straight out of school, and most of my friends were actually my coworkers or other people in the space. So I saw a different part of Chicago that I'm so thankful for. Yeah, we just didn't process it. I think it wasn't until I was at Orbitz where I thought, oh, wow, like this is some interesting stuff that's changing. And then when Facebook launched, that was the first time I went, holy cow, like this thing could be really interesting and powerful to use once marketers figure it out. That's mm-hmm. when I think things changed for me.
That's so interesting. I remember I was down the block. I was somewhere between Draft and FCB in that same period.
Oh, wow.
All the same experiences and like not necessarily realizing the magnitude. And I remember sitting at a desk like and joining Facebook and having the exact same experience, like you know, world changing when you realize the connectivity.
Yep.
Were you there for the dot-com crash?
That's how I left my job. Oh, did you see that come out? I spent some time at Target in Minnesota, and sometimes it comes out. My yas come out, especially being by the Canadian border. So that I caught that myself.
Yeah, I lived in Minnesota for a bit, so. Yeah.
So it comes out.
You're darn tootin'.
I am proudly part of the dot-com crash. So there was a lot of consolidation. It was 2001, and I'll never forget. We were told, everyone go to your cubicle and just wait, and you'll get a call, and we'll let you know if you've got a job. And how old was I? Early 20s. And I was one of the ones to not make the cut. And I was devastated. What is this? What did I dub? Then I was washing dishes. And the former creative director at Giant Step, Mark Routine, called me and said, hey, there's this website that's launched or about to launch, and it's called Orbitz. And all the airlines are funding it, and we're looking for a producer to work between the agency and Orbitz. Would you like to, you know, consider it? And then my first thought was, check this internet again.
Stupid internet.
It's a fad.
But I needed a job, and it seemed interesting. I was young, and I took it. And that's how my stint at Orbitz began. And then I became an Orbitz employee with producing content and images and banners. And back then it was 460 by 60 and 234 by 60 and 250 by 250 were languages I spoke every day. Like I lived in banner sizes. And then it shifted whereby I started working more so on the media buying side of things. I did ad serving. I was escaping characters out in DoubleClick. I was changing banner ads at 11:30 at night after watching The Tonight Show because the airline prices changed a couple times a day and we had to make sure the banner was current. And I also ticked off a lot of people by launching Pop Under ads. A lot of guys loved me because they used to play them on ESPN.com. And then when people learned that's part of my job, most people were like, ah, you annoy me with those pop-up or pop-under ads.
That's amazing. Can you talk a little bit about how those cool different formats were developed and like how that got done?
So Mark and his team were amazing wizards in terms of creativity. And there was always someone looking for the next creative thing that can be done on the internet. And as soon as pop-unders were developed or were a thing, Orbitz took it to the next level. And it wasn't just a pop under, it was an interactive game. It had code embedded in those ads. And that increased the stickability of somebody playing the game and being on the site and maybe buying a ticket. But over time, the brand realized that the consumer engagement was pretty stellar. So we had the pop under component was alive and kicking for some time. And those CPMs at first were pretty affordable, but then a lot of folks started doing pop unders. And then if you may recall, there was a lot of software downloads that were back around back then. Remember Claria or Gator? And then you had these top unders built in. So consumers would download a piece of software for utility. And then these top unders would just pop up when you downloaded it. I remember having like two extra computers or something just to test things out because that was a wild time.
So I remember a golf game quite fondly, yes. The little mini golf. I really enjoyed playing that, but I don't think I ever bought a ticket through Orbitz. I'm wondering, were those effective ads and how did you know they worked?
They were. Well, there was some controversy around them.
They were a lot of fun.
They were fun. And we always had a debate. I remember internally about the impression and then the view through impression and the stickability of what that meant. There was debate for quite some time about what KPIs we used. Hmm. They were effective at first because it helped to increase the engagement rate and time on the site time that they played, but over time, different offers came into the games as well. But they're almost there and had to remain from what I remember because it was a part of Orbitz. It was like a thing. People would go to ESPN. We did learn that some consumers would go to ESPN just to play the Orbitz games.
Oh, sure. Of course. I might have been one of them.
There was a time at Orbitz when we had so many ads running. We had so many partnerships running. It did get to a point where there was some challenges with the networks and where our ads were running because the networks just weren't disclosing what sites we were on. And some of these sites were inappropriate. So I actually remember some conversations pushing back and fighting with our media reps because I needed to understand where these ads were running, at least contextual to the category. That was a challenge. I remember that particular challenge in the media ad buying space of networks and the battle that networks had with one another to gobble each other up.
We haven't really talked to a practitioner before, you know, someone who actually did like media buying and they were down. Mm-hmm. What was your daily life like in like 2003?
When I came in the morning, we had to build our own data warehouse. The Orbitz had to build its own data warehouse from scratch. And every single day, by a certain time, the C-suite met every single day. And we had to have all of our reporting extrapolated, downloaded, and processed in this data warehouse by a certain time, or like my maiden name is Stefanovsky. You'd hear it down the hallway, ski, because my part wasn't finished. So it was a lot of manual copying and pasting and exporting. I do remember that. I remember not being able to keep my AOL Instant Messenger answered because all the reps run AOL Instant Messenger. I couldn't keep my phone from not ringing. We were always working on a CPM negotiation and getting banners and more banners created and loaded. It was an incredibly, incredibly manual process. I remember the DoubleClick conferences we would go to. I remembered a lot, it's a joke within some of us within the space who know us, but a lot of sushi lunches, a lot of lunches with media reps talking about ad buys and what have you. It Orbitz to me, and I tell people this all the time, it was probably the best job I had, but it was incredibly stressful and challenging. Because we were competing with Travelocity and Expedia. It wasn't just Orbitz. Now, our Matrix, our travel search technology, was the best in the business. Everyone knew that. But we were competing with everybody else. This is also before the airlines and the hoteliers working towards getting consumers to purchase on their own brand sites. It was still very much a third party. I had a life, but I worked a lot. We were all in it together learning. There was this collegiate type of, Orbitz was a true startup. And I think people forget that. I remember when Groupon started and when Grubhub started, but Orbitz was this amazing magic place where people were so committed because it was so new in terms of booking travel. It was hard, but it was magical.
Why'd you end up leaving?
Why did I leave? That's one of my favorite stories. It got to a point where it was so, so challenging and always, always going. I at age 26, I believe, I was having chest pains, and I saw, I went to the ER, and they had said to me that if they did all the, they hooked me up with whatever EKG tests and whatnot. And they just said, if you don't relax and just find some Zen, there'll be some challenges for you. So I put a plan in place to quit and go to Europe. So I quit Orbitz because I needed a .com break. And I left in the fall of 2004. But But when I gave them notice, I gave them 2 months notice. And then I went to France for a while and then came back on the Queen Mary 2 and came back to Chicago. So it was a much needed just dot-com break. I needed it. I was 27.
That's just what was going on at the time, right?
Like, right? So Edelman was looking for someone in their consumer division. And I went over there and it was the consumer side of, it was consumer and a bit of digital PR. And I ended up going to the digital team. So we were there with Jill, working in a function of supporting brand activities, PR activities from a digital component. And that was a really good time because at the end of that, I was the head of strategy and we had folks on our team who were in charge of different verticals. So we would find the latest trends, activities for those verticals and then educate the rest of the digital agency team for their programs, whatever program they were working on.
How would you define Edelman's niche at the time? And like why Edelman?
Oh, well, aside from being, I think still the most independent PR agency in the world, right? Edelman really, really, really had a good stronghold on consumer habits and CPG brands as it related to women, specifically mothers. Back in the day, you could work on Quaker or Burger King and talk to a blogger and say, hey, love what you do. We would like to send you, making this up, 5 new flavors of oatmeal. Here you go. And the content creators and bloggers would love that. But they also realized their power and what have you when it came to partnerships with brands and so on. And that blossomed into the world we see it today. Content creators, bloggers. There was a term that was used quite a bit back then called mommy bloggers. I wasn't the biggest fan of it, but that alluded to other things. So we were able, Jill and I, to see that the infancy of the CPG brands, Bush's Baked Beans, for example, realizing how much more power a content creator had with an engaged audience versus doing, a billboard on I-94. Mm-hmm. That was also really a turning point for me to see the power of the everyday consumer convincing their friends, their family, whatever, this is what I use and do and it works. Here you go. And that was a shift, I think, with brands as well, with where their marketing dollars should go.
Totally. And like the springboard of influencer marketing and yep.
So I was at Edelman and there was an opportunity to, I was the global head of social media for Motorola Mobility, a pre-Google purchase. And that is probably one of the first places I saw the battle of social and where it belongs. At that time, social media was seen as a brand play. It was seen as a brand play and a marketing play. I found the same digital marketing assumptions were flowing in social media at the time. So if you did a $40,000 ad on Yahoo, you could extrapolate clicks, propensity to buy, and so on. And at that time, social was seen almost the same way with put this thing on this platform or talk to these bloggers and it should result in sales. And that was challenging because social to me has been and always will be a relationship. If you look at the definition, the early definition of social media, it was all about pre-packaged templates to allow people to communicate with each other, like the WordPresses and the Typepads and the Squarespaces and forums. People used to make fun of forums, but the social media definition was truly about interconnectivity people and being able to do that vis-a-vis things you don't have to build, more like Jenga it together. And when I started, that function I learned was in the PR team. And when I started, it became a brand thing. I wasn't aware of that. I quickly realized that the way that it was seen was marketing. And I think social over time shifted more with the PR side of things because it was relationship driven. Like to me, social media, if you think about what's that show with The Price is Right. I felt like traditional marketing and digital marketing was even a bit condescending to social media, assuming it was an instant like D2C, bottom of the funnel relationship in the beginning.
There was a time when there were a lot of startups in the social space, social analytics, there were dozens of tools.
Yeah.
And then on social publishing side, there were a bunch. And what tools did you use? Did you actually use? Were there any that you recall?
Yeah. Sprout Social. Social, I still use it. They happen to be Chicago-based, but I think they're great. Sprout Social is still terrific. There were a lot of SaaS-based tools when it came to reporting, when it came to even today, like the biggest boon in SaaS-based products and social media is influencer marketing. tracking someone's engagement and so on. But the earliest days of social, the platforms themselves, but Sprinklr, I've used Sprinklr, I've used Sprout Social. The earliest one, gosh, it starts with a B. I have to remember the name and I'll follow up. It was
Brandwatch.
Brandwatch, yes, but Jill, you might remember this. The beginning days of social. Thank you, Buddy Media. Thank you, Buddy Media. That yes. helped you, especially in Facebook, make promotions and contests. That was Buddy Media was huge back then. If you didn't do something on yeah. Buddy Media, like something was wrong. Yeah.
That was like a templated brand page.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And they had little Quizlets and things too.
And one more that wasn't socially related, but we used it quite a bit in social was ePrize. It worked from the standpoint of bloggers and content creators when there were contests.
So today you're the director of affiliate marketing at JB Commerce. Mm-hmm. For our listeners, would you mind really unpacking what is affiliate marketing?
Yeah. So affiliate marketing has been around since the last two decades, but now it's getting a different type of brand look, if you will, in the form of commerce, performance. You hear that quite a bit. Affiliate marketing essentially enables a brand like Lint or Johnston & Murphy, they're clients of ours, to have deals and offers whereby third-party sites and publishers can display those offers and ads. And then when a purchase happens, a commission takes place. Many people may hear of Rakuten, used to be called Linkshare, in terms of consumer shop online for something, they get cash back. That is a loyalty partner within the affiliate space. Affiliate marketing has really survived so many economic downturns in the last years. And with the pandemic, we've actually seen a bigger spike in affiliate marketing because so many folks are shifting and having businesses online and becoming their own entrepreneurs. From an industry perspective, we are seeing that content publishers like the Meredith of the world, the Condis of the world, the Zips of the world, they often will not place a piece of news or whatnot from a PR standpoint without an affiliate link, because the church and state back in the day of a content site, a news publication or article, that there was never cash associated with it, as you know. It was very much, this is an editorial, it's content. But as the budgets have shifted over the years and brands are no longer doing sliding fees, they're not doing large sponsorships. And I learned from the days of Edelman and moving forward in the PR space today, many brands are looking for a performance-based type of marketing in general. They have to be able to track the click. The days of you receive 3 million impressions don't exist as much anymore. So we're seeing from the affiliate side of things, we are partnering with PR agencies. We are working with content publishers in a way to track everything. And it's a whole other industry now because we can track every click because of what's happening with Apple, because of what's happening with cookies. Affiliate marketing has always been able to know the consumer. They know who their folks are, who their visitors are. So it's a really interesting time to be back in the space. I came back to it in November, and it's been just gangbuster busy ever since with this shift.
My mind was just blown when you called attention to the 1P data opportunity. Like that's huge, right? Like huge. I get it. Now I get it. No-brainer. Can you talk a little bit about the technology involved in targeting and measuring affiliate?
Yeah. So in affiliate marketing, there are, when you are a brand of, any size, you can work with a multitude of platforms in the industry to have your affiliate program live on. Here's a bunch of them: Commission Junction, Rakuten, ShareASale, Impact, AvantLink, and they all have different types of nuances and bells and whistles and so on. And then we at eB Commerce and one of the agencies will work with you and work with the network and platform to elevate that platform. And it's pretty seamless from there. One of the two of the oldest partners, well, I'd say three, who've been around are Rakuten, used to be called Linkshare, Commission Junction, and ShareASale. ShareASale was based in Chicago. They're still there. They were. They became part of AWIN.
Amazing. So one more question for you. Women leadership roles in ad tech, what's your thought on the evolution there?
There obviously isn't enough. And I have different theories to why there aren't enough. My nature has always been a tinkerer, a learner. I still have two, three monitors set up in my house. That's just always been my nature. And I've always made it a point to keep up with changing technologies and what have you. I do know from speaking to many women in the space over the years that there hasn't been a collective support system for women in ad tech, especially women who also decide to happen to be moms and have a family, but still contribute. Like Jill, I know that you're a mother as well. And that's also why it's so great that you're doing what you're doing. And I think that's really sad. And there's such an opportunity for mentorship in this space in general, but I think women in particular need to come back to the space or have the opportunity to try new things within the space and not be hesitant with the traditional boys club in ad tech.
Yes. Like-minded. I honestly think, I think about, the timeline of ad tech and just the nature of women our age and starting at, what's this internet thing and progressing in our careers. And also, like you said, being moms, I feel like there's a next round of ability to accelerate and be the next ad tech women leadership with that timeline of like family getting a little older and having more opportunity to lean back into career. So that's one of my like hopes and dreams for like all the women I know our age.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we would like to thank Julia Douglas for letting us use her music. Julia Douglas with two S's.com. Thank you.